Well, good morning. Good to see everyone. Keith, would you like to open us up with a word of prayer?
Father of mercies, we're so grateful to be able to gather today, and we are so grateful for Brother Mike, who always works very hard to prepare the lessons. And I pray, Lord, that you would bless him today to help us understand better what your word says. And I pray that you would open up all of our hearts and minds to the instruction of your word. In Christ's name.
Amen. All right. 1 Samuel chapter 20. And I'm going to begin in verse 30 and read through the end of the chapter. It said, then Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a rebellious, perverse woman, do you not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore, now send and bring him to me, and he must surely die. But Jonathan answered Saul his father, and he said to him, why should he be put to death? What has he done? And then Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him down. So Jonathan knew that his father had decided to put David to death. Then Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger. He did not eat food on the second day of the new moon, for he was grieved over David because of his father had dishonored him. Now, it came about that in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field for the appointment with David, and a little lad was with him, and he said to his lad, run, find now the arrows which I'm about to shoot. And as the lad was running, he shot an arrow past him, and when the lad reached the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the lad and said, is not the arrow beyond you? And Jonathan called after the lad, he said, hurry, be quick, do not stay. And Jonathan's lad picked up the arrow and came to his master. But the lad was not aware of anything, only Jonathan and David knew about this matter. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to his lad, and he said to him, you go, bring them to the city. And when the lad was gone, David arose from the south side, and he fell on his face to the ground, and he bowed three times. They kissed each other, and they wept together, and David wept all the more. Jonathan said to David, go in safety, and as much as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord will be between me and you, and between my descendants and your descendants. Then he arose and departed, while Jonathan went into the city. If you remember last week, I told you there was a parallel back at starting in verse 24. There would be, Saul would have a question, you would have Jonathan's response, and then you would have Saul's anger. Well, in this case, you're going to have Jonathan has a question to his father. You're going to have Saul's response and then Jonathan's anger towards his father's response. Why was it that Saul angered? In verse 30, it said, Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse and rebellious woman. Anybody remember why he said that? What took place that he called to Jonathan? One, he reprimanded him. He brought his mother into it, dragging her into it.
He supposedly
had conspired with David. They obviously remember they concocted a lie to try to figure out, was his dad really going to try to kill him? And he said, no, my dad's not. Well, then he finds out that he is, and he used a specific word that means to escape. And the Hebrew word was malat. The first one he uses to mean to go away is shalat. But when he gets to the end, remember, he's embellishing on this story, and he says a word that says to escape you. And that is, I don't know if y'all were reading that, and you go, well, man, what triggered Saul? Well, when you see it in the Hebrew, that's the word that you use. So he's basically going, hey, Saul's trying to escape you, and he... Now, so when he understands that, Saul then, in anger, flips out. He calls to Jonathan, and he still wants to try to establish some type of dynasty reign, even though earlier in the chapters it had already been removed from him because of his disobedience for making the sacrifice when he was not supposed to. But it's interesting. He says, as long as the son of Jesse is alive, you will not reign. What is that? What is Saul saying by implying, Jonathan, as long as David's alive, you won't be king? What's David the implication? What's that?
David has to die.
Because David will be king if not. He's saying, look, David's going to be king. If you don't kill him, your dynasty will never be put in place. And then we get to verse 32. He says, but Jonathan then answered Saul, his father. Now, here's the question. Remember, we had the parallel. Here's the question. Jonathan's question to him. But Jonathan answered his father, and he said, why should he be put to death, and what has he done? Is that not exactly the same questions that David had asked Jonathan? Why does your dad want to kill me? What have I done? And this is also the same thing that Jonathan asked his father earlier in the book when he says, hey man, what has David done to you? Why would you want to sin against him? Why would you want to sin against him by shedding innocent blood? So now Jonathan has actually come to the conclusion that yes, my dad really does hate David. And then here, that was the question, and here's Saul's response. He hurled his spear at him to strike him down. Well, we got two things we can say about Saul. One, he likes a spear.
He's a bad shot.
Two, he's a bad shot. I mean, he is. Caleb says he's thrown, I say twice, but Caleb said three times, so we'll give Caleb the benefit of the doubt. He's thrown it three times at David, and he's missed. Now he's thrown it at his own son to strike his own son down, and he's missed. It's interesting. Every time we see Saul, he's with that spear. So he tries to strike Jonathan down because he is angry at Jonathan for his love for David, basically. And then we get to verse 34. It says, Jonathan then arose from the table. And there's two emotions that Jonathan has in that verse. It says he had fierce anger, and he grieved. Man, those almost seem like they would be in conflict with one another. How many of you have been in here so angry that you were grieving? I haven't. I have been grieving to the point to where I was angry, frustrated, that, man, I am tired of this grief. But Jonathan's very angry at his dad, and he's angry at his dad for the reason of dishonor and shameful. At the end of verse 34, does translations say dishonor, shameful? What?
Shameful.
Anybody else have anything other than dishonor and shameful? No. Well, what was shameful? And who was he being shameful against? Was it Jonathan or David?
He's ashamed of his dad.
He was ashamed of his dad's actions,
right?
Towards who?
Towards David.
That's kind of difficult. But to me, it's difficult. Yeah. If you look at the vernacular of it, it's hard to understand. Is he mad? When you look in the Hebrew, it's not really clear. It says he was shameful for his acts towards him. Well, who's the him? Immediately we think it would be, okay, is it towards David? Okay. Or was it towards Jonathan? Either way, what his acts were shameful, they were reprehensible, and he should have been rebuked for what he done. Look, he's trying to kill an innocent man, David, who's done nothing but good for him. Now, he's taken his faithful son, and has he not tried to do the exact same thing? Has Jonathan been a faithful son? What we know of him, has he not? Has he not gone out and fought the Lord's battles early on before David entered the scene? Has he not gone out and he fought the battles for his father? Matter of fact, he went out, he slayed 30 Philistines, just him and his armor bearer, and who got the credit?
Saul
did. And Jonathan didn't stand up and say, hold up, dude. It wasn't that old dusty guy that did that, it was me. No, he let his father take the credit because he, by extension, was doing the bidding of his father for the glory of God. So, shameful acts towards David and Jonathan both. It's hard, like I said, it's hard to say which one, when it says dishonor him, who the him is. That pronoun in the Hebrew is hard. Is that antecedent going back to David, or is that going back to Jonathan? In English, the pronoun normally goes right back to its first noun, proper noun, which would have been David. So I can understand how people come to that conclusion, but it's hard to say in the Hebrew. And in verse 35, it says, "Now it came about that in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field for the appointment with David." Remember, what was the appointment with David from last week? What was their plan? Not the lie, but the plan.
To shoot the arrows to let him know whether or not Saul was against him or not.
Yep, if he shot the arrow closer, the boy would get it, and that would mean he was safe and he could come on back in. If he shot it past him, he says, "Hey, you're going to have to, when I say for him to go a little further, that means it's time for you to skedaddle." So he said to his lad, "You run now, find the arrow which I'm about to shoot." And the lad was running, and he shot the arrow past him. The lad reached the place where the arrow had shot, and Jonathan called to him. He said, it's beyond you. And here's the words that David was supposed to hear. Hurry, be quick, do not stay. I mean, hurry, it's time for you to go. You better be quick about what you do, and don't stick around here. And why was he saying that? Because Saul now knew. He now knew that his father's intent was to kill David. Jonathan told his lad, "Pick up the arrows for his master." In verse 39, "But the lad was not aware of anything." And the anything is not the matter of about him and David, what their scheme was to try to figure out by actions whether Saul wanted to kill him. David and him knew the matter. Jonathan gave his weapons to his lad and said, "Go, bring them to the city." It's interesting here that Jonathan disarms himself to go meet his friend in the field. Anybody have any thoughts of why he would do that? Who? I can't hear. That's exactly right. Yeah, he said, "All right, here." He understands that his dad wants to kill him, so that when I go walking out to David, so David can see as he walked up to him, "Hey, I am of no threat to you, and I am coming to you not in the anger of my father, but in the contrition and love of our covenant that we had made with each other earlier in the chapter." So he disarmed himself so that David would in no way, shape, form, or fashion think that he wants to harm him. And it said that the lad was gone. David rose up from the south side, and he fell on the ground, and he bowed three times, and they kissed each other, and they wept together. But David wept all the more. Now, for you and I, we don't normally meet each other with a holy kiss. Okay? This is not uncommon for two men in Hebrew culture to, at a time of great grief, or a time of great departure of one another, to embrace one another and give each other a kiss, normally on the cheek, on the head. And I don't know about y'all, but I've been in a very great time of grief before, and I can tell you, I love the kiss of my wife. That's all great and good, man. It was nothing better than having my friend put his arm around me and kiss me on top of the head, man. It was like, man, you know, sometimes there's nothing better than the embracement of your friend. And this is what's taking place here. You got to remember, these two men's souls, it says, were knitted together. These two men had basically become one for one another. And they were looking out for the best interest of one another. It says here that David wept all the more. Why?
He knew his vow.
I'm sorry?
He knew his vow. They could never be together again.
From this perspective, that is correct. From his perspective and from Jonathan's perspective, this would be the last time they would probably see one another. And Jonathan's going to leave. He's going to go back to the city. He's going to go back to living his life, is he not? Where's David going?
Caves and running in the wilderness.
You remember, I told you, chapter 19, that was a pivotal point. David, from that point on, is a fugitive. We don't see anybody here with David, do we? Did we see anybody with David last chapter? We saw David with Michal, or Michal, everyone said, his wife. She concocted a scheme to let him out. He took off. Was there anybody with David from that point on? I mean, David's been, for however long this period of time is, he's been on the run by himself. And that's, I want you, that's very significant when we get to the next chapter, which we're going to get into.
Didn't he have a team of fighting men that fight along with him now?
Not yet, not now. Not now.
It's the next chapter.
That's the next, yeah. And those men that come along from him will be actually, remember how we talked about Saul would find men and take them unto himself. So remember the distinction we're seeing. Saul takes, well, we're going to see that David, when he runs out and he gets to where he's on his own, men attach themselves to him. Now, don't get me wrong, there's the motley crew that wind up getting around him. You're going to have men that wind up being very great men of valor. You're going to have Othniel. You're going to have Abishai. And you're going to have Joab. And just to let you know, when we get into them guys, those are three dudes you do not mess with. I mean, they have no problem whacking somebody's head off for back-talking David at all. But those men have not yet attached themselves. Remember, once he is deemed, remember you had this private thing we know is going on in Saul's mind. Hey, I'll let him go fight against the Philistines and let the Philistines kill them. Remember? Hey, you go out. Remember you had a bag of foreskins hoping that, okay. He was hoping that the Philistines were going to do it. When that didn't happen, then what did he do? He tried to kill him himself. He sent messengers to do that. Well, he hit Michal's house, then he sent messengers. So something that went private then became public. As that became public, the men that were entrusted to him just by default were taking from him. Saul's not going to give him a band of soldiers that he would have to then fight his own men against. Remember, it went from 10,000 men to 1,000 in a chapter. Remember?
So that's why I was thinking he had a team, because Saul killed his thousands, he had an army, so David killed his 10,000s. He had to have somebody with him to kill more than 10,000.
Yeah, but we're in the progression of the story, that was before it had become public that he's going to kill David. Remember, he sent three times, he sent messengers to go do that, and the Spirit of the Lord made those guys start prophesying. And then Saul said, well, dadgummit, if they're not going to kill that little rascally guy, I'll go do it myself. And then he winds up being shamed and stripped down naked, and he prophesied until David could get on out of town. So at this point, there's nobody with David. And when we get into chapter 21, we'll get there in just a second. So they wept. This is the last time, if you weren't reading already ahead, this would be the last time that they probably were going to see one another. And what did they do? They renewed the covenant between him and his descendants. What was the covenant that they made with each other early on?
They do good to each other, but also to their seed.
To their seed. And it even then, why would Jonathan have said, I need you to be loving kindness and compassionate towards my descendants? Why?
He knew he'd be the king.
He knew he was going to be the king. And what did they do to the descendants of the kings before? They killed him. So he's like, look, man, don't do that to my family. Don't do that. And I want your word on this. And I want it before the Lord. So when you get to the end, it says, so he arose and departed while Jonathan went back into the city. So Jonathan goes back to living his life, and David's on the run. And this is going to be David's life until we get to the end of the book. On the run. Now he'll seek refuge in places that probably not real becoming of where we would go, but he will seek refuge. And God will protect his man. Remember, he was a man after God's own choosing. God had chosen David for the purpose of being the Davidic king from the line of Judah. He will protect his king. Now, we're going to see that David's going to trust in himself. We're going to see that David lies. We're going to see that David does other things that we probably would not have done. And that has to do with David begin to trusting in his own abilities instead of leaning on his understanding of God. I mean, remember, lean not on your own understandings, but in all of your ways acknowledge me and I will direct your path. Well, that's not what David's going to do. And that's not to beat up David. I don't know about you guys, but if we were on the run and it seemed like everything was closing in around us, I don't know about y'all, man. I'm going to be praying to the Lord, but buddy, I'm going to be strapping. I'm going to be prepared to do whatever I have to do to take care of myself and my life. And that's what we're going to get into. We're fixing to start chapter 21, and I'm just going to tell you right straight up, this is, to me, probably one of the most difficult interpretive chapters in all of this book. And I'm going to explain to you why as we go through it. It's not easy. So as we read through it, I'm going to read the whole chapter, and I'm going to try to get through it. We've got 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes. I'm going to try to get through it. If not, we'll pick up next week. It says, then David came to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest. And Ahimelech came trembling to meet David, and he said to him, why are you alone and no one with you? And David said to Ahimelech the priest, the king has commissioned me with a matter and has said to me, let no one know anything about the matter in which I am sending you and with which I have commissioned you. And I have directed the young men to a certain place. Now therefore, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever can be found. And the priest answered David, and he said, there is no ordinary bread on hand, but there is consecrated bread. If only the young men have kept themselves from women. And David answered the priest, and he said, surely women have been kept from us as previously when we are set out, and the vessels of the men, of the young men, are holy, though it would be that way on an ordinary journey. How much more today would their vessels be holy? So the priest gave him the consecrated bread, and there was no bread but the bread of the presence, which was removed before the Lord, in order that hot bread would be put in its place on the day in which it was taken. Now, one of the servants of Saul was there that day, and he was being detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg the Edomite. He was the chief of Saul's shepherds. David said to Ahimelech, now, is there not a spear or a sword on hand? For I have brought neither sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's matter was urgent. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, behold, it is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you would take it for yourself, take it, for there is no other except it here. And David said, there is none like it. Give it to me. Then David arose. He fled from Saul, and he went to Achish, the king of Gath. But the servants of Achish said, is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of this one and dance before Saul, saying, Saul has slain his thousands, but David his 10,000s? And David took these words to heart, and he became greatly afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So he disguised himself with insanity, and he was before them, and he acted insanely in their hands. And he scribbled on the doors of the gate. He let saliva run down his beard. And then Achish said to his servants, behold, you see you have brought this madman behaving to me? Why would you bring him to me? Do I lack madmen in my own house? Why have you brought this madman to my presence? Shall I have another madman in my house? And that's the end. Okay, here it is. It says that David came to Nob, and Ahimelech was the priest. Eli, you had Dirtbag 1, Dirtbag 2.
Which translation is that one?
That is the Collier Swift translation. These were the two of Eli that were prostituting the women at the temple, at the tabernacle gate, remember? And because Eli wouldn't, because Eli would not reprimand them or remove them from their position, these men were deemed to be accursed and that God was going to strike them dead, right? These two men died when the ark was captured. Oh, wow. The ark was captured. These two were killed. This guy, his line was cut off. This guy had a son named Ichabod, but he had also a son, Ahitub. He had a son, Ahimelech. That's where we're at. Remember, this curse was this whole line was at some point going to be cut off. And we would have thought back here is when it was going to happen, right? Would we not? I mean, who did God raise up to carry out the priestly duties?
Samuel.
But Samuel was not a Levitical priest, so he could not do anything in the tabernacle where this was what was going on. Now, the other problem is when the ark was captured, where did it go? I know that's been 47 years ago since we were back there, but where did the ark go when they captured it? Yeah, and it was passed around like a hot potato. Why?
Because they got hemorrhoids and rats.
And yeah, hemorrhoids and rats and all kinds of stuff, and they finally sent it back, and where did it go from there? Put it on a cart, put it on the lowing cows, and where did they send it? Kiriath Jearim. That's where it went. When it got to Kiriath Jearim, what happened? It wiped out 30 men, Levites. Killed 30 Levites. And they said, hold on, we got to move this thing. So, it went from, once it was captured, it came from here. I'm just going to put K, because I know I can't spell that. It went from there, and then when it got here, after it wiped out those people, they sent it to Abinadab's house. And it's interesting, on the hill. Sent to Abinadab's house on the hill. And if you remember correctly, I told you it was there for 67 years. You're going to say, Mike, you just lied to me. Because it's saying here that Ahimelech was at the presence of the Lord with the consecrated bread. Now, this is where it gets difficult. The last time we saw the ark, it was at Abinadab's house, right? I want you to turn over to 2 Samuel. I think it's chapter 5. 6. At this point, David's already been installed king. Saul has died. And in chapter 6, now David again, chapter 6, verse 1. Now David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. David arose and he went up with the people who were with him to Baal Judah to bring up the ark of God, which is called by the name of the one who is the Lord of hosts, who is enthroned above the cherubim, and the place where the ark of God was placed on a new cart that it might be brought to the house of God. And where does it say it was at? Abinadab's house up on the hill. So, we have a major discrepancy, do we not? Chapter 21 is saying, this is in Nob. I'm going to make a suggestion. Okay? This is when your interpretive problems lie. When understanding where Nob was, understanding this became the city of the priest, to be consistent, I would say the ark is not present. But the ephod is present. It says that. What was the ephod at times recognized as? Remember, they had the Urim and the Thummim. They needed to make a statement. They needed to ask the Lord. What did they do? The presence of the Lord was actually considered in the ephod. You remember when Saul was going to fight the Philistines? And even some of our translations even had some discrepancies. It said that Saul called for the ark to bring it to him. But then some translations said, bring the ephod. You remember? And he asked Ahitub, he said, hey, stop reaching your hand towards that. There's no reason to ask the Lord anymore. Well, was it the ark that was there or was it the ephod? Did they ask the ark or did they ask the ephod? Which one did they ask? The ephod. Nobody talked to the ark. The ark didn't respond. The ark would not have been brought out into open plain view since this time. Okay? So that's where this becomes difficult. Nob would have been the place of the priest that would have been established sometime with when Samuel was still alive, obviously. And it would have been the place where they would have set up some form the table would have been here, the menorah still could have been here, but we don't believe that this was here. This would have been something that they would have set up with what they could do to try to honor the Lord to the best of their ability. Remember, was the tabernacle even around at this point? When was the tabernacle destroyed? When they went into Shiloh. You understand, this is why they have some major interpretive issues, because now we're going to have the bread, which is here. David comes. This is another thing. It says that David enters the house of the Lord. Was David qualified to enter the house of the Lord? Was he? No. I even tell you what's even one worse than that. Who was detained before the Lord? It says Doeg. Who was this guy?
He's an
Edomite. And it says he was detained before the Lord. Do you think an Edomite would have been in here?
No.
You understand the problems that lie when we read this. And then we have Jesus' account of this very thing. And it says that on that, and you can look at it if you want to. You have, I think it's in Luke 6, Mark 3. And either Mark, end of Mark 2, beginning of 3, and Luke 12. And you have Jesus' account of it. Anybody remember? Who does it say was the priest then? Why would he have said that? Those are questions to be asked, is it not? Okay. Now, one, we do not believe this is here. We do believe this is here. We have no reason to believe that this is not here. They have set up some form of the tabernacle to worship with priestly. Remember, there was no priest from the time that this happened. Was there any priest that had been raised up other than Samuel? No. So they were raising up priests forever long this was. However long Samuel, 40 years, however long it had been. So, Jesus made the statement in Mark as by far being the priest for this reason. Who was the one? Remember, it was about David in Jesus' explanation. Jesus' explanation was making it about David. Who was the person that carried the ephod and then carried the ark before the Lord for David? It was Abiathar. He was actually and I'm not going to finish this chapter. This is the guy that will be the only one left. And we ain't going to get that far, but he will be the only one left. So when Jesus says, hey, the priest Abiathar, it's because he is the one that is connected to the narrative of David. Okay? Who was the... Look. At times in Scripture, it is given in general terms. I get hung up on the details. I don't know about y'all, but when you're reading, did anybody have any of these issues when they were reading that this week? Or week before? Or the week before? Has anybody ever read this and come and go, hey man, there's some things that seem hard, or am I the only retarded one here? I mean, there are some major issues here. So, Ahimelech would have had a by authority. He would have been the last one. So when Jesus says he entered the house of in Mark, that David entered the house of the Lord with the priesthood of Abiathar, had to do with Abiathar being the recognized priest of the king of David. Okay? Now, any questions, disagreements? Have I completely confused you?
I have just one question on the
I'm just kidding. I know you can't read my handwriting.
No. Where can I find that at? Because is that in 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel, the one where it shows Ahitub being the son of...
It's actually going to come in chapter 23.
Okay.
But if you... I can get you a list of the breakdown.
No, that's cool. Okay. I hadn't seen that up until this point.
I think it's in chapter 23 when we actually... He kills all... Maybe it's next? I can't remember. Chapter 23 or the next one he kills in chapter 22... He kills them all, and he actually, once again, you remember when Saul is very angry at someone, he doesn't call them by their name. Remember, what did he call Jonathan? You son of a rebellious, perverse woman. And when he was mad at David, what did he say to David? Oh, the son of David, I'll kill you. I mean, the son of Jesse, I'll kill you. Well, when he gets mad at this dude, he says, oh, you son of Ahitub. That's how we know. And you can go through, I think it's in Chronicles. I'll find it for you. And it gives the list of these men. Obviously, he's not in there because he never acted as a... It gives the list of these. He is actually removed from his position by Solomon, which is a fulfillment that the line of Eli would be cut off. And it actually says that in 1 Kings. There's things that he's left that he has to take care of. Remember, he kind of gives his Solomon, David gives him kind of the Godfather speech. Hey, look, I'm fixing to go on, but there's some riffraff you got to take care of that I did not take care of while I was alive. And I need you to take care of it. One of them would be under the prophetic word of God. He would take care of this. He would no longer carry the... He would no longer be a priest. It was taken from here. And where's Tim? He's not in here. Me and him talked about this. Because a lot of people go, well, how did the line go from the line of Eli to the line of Zadok? If you know anything about the priesthood, that happens. Well, there has to be a shift somewhere, right? It happens here. He says, hey, I'm not going to kill you, but you ain't carrying the ark no more because of what you did with my dad. Remember, he was part of the conspiracy to overthrow David with Absalom, okay? He says, I should kill you, but I'm not going to because you carried the ark. I'm going to send you out and go back to, I think it was Anathoth or whatever, the priest. He says, but Zadok actually becomes the priest, which means it moves this. I know I'm overwhelming y'all with information. This was Emathar. It moves back over to Eleazar. If you remember, that's where the line continued for a very long time up until it shifted. At some point, it shifted from Eleazar to Eli, and we have no idea. But it goes back to Eleazar, who was the faithful high priest, and it goes back to his line, and Zadok was a descendant of that. So if you want me to get you that list, I'll get it for you.
I looked at that and I saw it in chapter 22 after you said that. So.
Okay, so the end of verse 1. Why are you alone and no one is with you? That seems a little redundant. If I'm alone, what does that mean? No one's with me. So he asked him, why are you alone and no one with you? I mean, it was a legitimate question, but it says that Ahimelech was trembling when he saw David. Why would he have been trembling when he saw David?
Afraid to kill him?
Certainly. If the hubbub on the street was, hey man, David's a wanted man. And if David's a wanted man and he's coming to me, is David here to kill me?
He's got a glass sword.
Not yet. He will. Not yet. He will. And that's another interpretive issue we got to deal with. I mean, this is loaded with issues. So he says, why are you alone, no with you? And David said to the priest, here it is, he lies. The king has commissioned me with a matter and has said to me, let no one know anything about the matter of which I am sending you, with which I have commissioned you and have directed the young men to a certain place. One, did the king send him there? No? No. Why was he there? He was one, we know he was hungry, and from what Doeg says later, that he actually came there maybe to entreat the Lord, to ask questions, and that was where that device was by which he could ask the Lord. But he was alone because, dude, he didn't have nobody with him. He was disarmed. So when he shows up there, there is two men that are looking face to face to one another. I believe Ahimelech was a faithful priest, and we'll see that when you get to the slaughter of Nob. Dude, he is aware that David lied to him, and he does not say, look here, King Saul, he lied to me. I was not aware of what was going on. You know what he does? He actually appeals to David's character as being a faithful man and a faithful servant, and that David was doing what David was supposed to do. And we'll get into that part when we get to chapter 22. But you have two men. You have Ahimelech, who doesn't seem like he's really trusting David, right? Right? Then, and you got David, who ain't trusting Ahimelech, right? Is that fair to say or no? Yeah, of course he's not trusting him. Why do you think he just told him a lie? He doesn't know if he's aware that Saul's trying to kill him. So what's he going to do? He's going to say, hey, wait a minute, I'm here for the king. As long as he says he's here for the king, then he's going to give him whatever he needs. And that's what actually happens. He says, but I've been commissioned and have directed the young men to a certain place. One, does David have any young men with him? Did David have anybody with him? No, David is alone. There is no one yet attached himself to David. He says, now, therefore, do you have any bread? Give me 5 loaves. All right, well, I'm sure we could find some preachers to tell us why he said 5 loaves. I mean, just like he had 5 stones. I don't know. Maybe that just seems like David's favorite number. But he asked for 5 loaves, and we have no idea why he asked for 5 loaves. Now, maybe it was to keep up with the narrative, hey, I've got some guys that I'm going to go eat with, and I'm going to need more than a loaf. Maybe that's the reason, and that we do not know. But he says, or whatever can be found. And then the priest said to David, there's no ordinary bread on hand, but there's consecrated bread. You should ask yourself. All right, they're in the city of the priest. He asked for some food. There's 85 dudes there. And the only bread there was the consecrated bread? Understand, this is a city. This has got, you're going to see later, there's going to be men and women and children and cattle and oxen and everything that's going to be slaughtered, and there's only 12 pieces of bread here? Seems a little odd. And it'll be to be continued, because we got to go. We'll pick up in verse 3 next week, and we'll go from there. Andy, you'll close us?
Yeah. Well, thank you for this time. Thank you for your word, Lord. Thank you for the ability to look at it, consider it, and learn from it. Now bless us in worship as we continue in worship. And may everything done be done for the glory of your Son, who so loved us that he gave himself for us. Amen.